Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, March 15, 2016. South Sudan's economic crisis is forcing the country to cut the number of its diplomats overseas.
They are not closing any embassies. What they are doing is to reduce the number of officials in some of the embassies where we have very big numbers, so that we can also save some money and be able to keep the upkeep of the rest of the embassy.
And a Catholic bishop in Western Equatoria is ringing alarm bell that some people may starve to death if the peace deal is not implemented.
People are already eating once a day, which is not the culture here. And so we are concerned about it, and we hope to try always possible to encourage the population to stay peaceful and be able to grow their own food during the next rain season.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's foreign minister says his country is reducing the number of diplomats in its 32 South Sudanese embassies around the world. Barnaba Marial Benjamin says the country has not been able to pay its diplomats since December last year. He says the Minister of Finance and the Bank of South Sudan are working to send the salaries of South Sudanese diplomats and other local support staff who work in the country's foreign missions. Marial denied that South Sudanese in Ghana, Egypt and Harare have received eviction notices to vacate embassy buildings in the capitals of those two countries due to South Sudan's failure to pay its rent.
Well, what is happening, of course, we have had some delays in some payments towards rent, that is true. But what we are doing because of the economic crisis is that we are reducing the number of staff in our embassies in order to cut down on the costs. I think that's what is happening, but we are not closing any embassies. What they are doing is to reduce the number of officials in some of the embassies where we have very big numbers, so that we can also save some money and be able to keep the upkeep of the rest of the embassies.
How many South Sudanese embassies are out there in the world, if you can give us a head count?
Oh, in the world, we have frankly about 32 embassies, which is quite a big number. And that's why we have to cut down the staff in some of these embassies.
We have news from Cairo saying that your embassy there got an eviction notice because they have not been able to pay rent.
No, I think that is a bit of an exaggeration. There is no issue of eviction, really. Because the delay, for reasons, when things are being put right and corrected, I think cannot lead to that. I think there is a bit more of an exaggeration on that. But that we have some economic problems, that is true, and that's why we have decided that we have to reduce the number of officials in some of those embassies, including the Cairo embassy. We are also going to cut that. We have also cut down on the number of people who will remain in the embassy there. And I'm sure this will make it possible for us to have adequate funds to take care of the rest of the embassies all over.
And how about Accra and Harare? We also hear that your embassies in these two countries are going through a tough time.
No, Accra and Harare, I think they are going on all right. There was a delay, but we resolved some of that problem. In Accra, I think they had a problem in the building because the building, part of the building got burnt. I think that's why they had a crisis. It was a local fault, I think, the building where they were.
When I spoke to some diplomats, they told me that they have not received their salaries for 4 consecutive months. What are you going to do with your diplomats who have not received their salaries for 4 months?
No, they should receive their salaries, and that's what the government is trying to do now, so that they receive their salaries as soon as possible, and that both the Minister of Finance and the Central Bank are working on that in order to remit their salaries.
So we are talking about next week? Are we talking about any time frame?
Well, I'm thinking talking of a time frame. It has to be done as soon as possible. Next week, they should be receiving their salaries. Yeah.
Sometimes back, the parliament was questioning the spendings of the Foreign Affairs Ministry. They said the spendings were just unexplained. Was that situation resolved?
Well, yes. I think, you see, the foreign ministries everywhere throughout the world, as you know, they are quite an expensive institution to run. And the Foreign Affairs Ministry gets involved in so many things, issues related to the national security of the country. So definitely some funds can go out of Foreign Affairs for certain purposes which are for the national interests of the country. So that reflects as if the Foreign Affairs is spending a lot of money. But I think it is spending the money which is actually worth spending in terms of the national security of the Republic of South Sudan.
That's South Sudan's Foreign Minister Barnaba Marielle Benjamin speaking to me from Juba yesterday. The bishop of the Tamburayambio Catholic Diocese is warning that residents of the former Western Equatorial State will likely starve in the coming months if South Sudan's leaders do not move quickly to implement the peace deal. The UN says thousands of villagers fled their homes after recent fighting broke out between government forces and local vigilantes. Armed vigilantes control several rural areas, making it hard for villagers to return to their homes and produce food. Gift Friday has this report for VOA from Juba.
Bishop Eduardo Hiboro Kusala says, although former Western Equatorial State was often referred to as the breadbasket of South Sudan in the past, today many residents can only afford one small meal a day. He says this is the first time in recent memory that the area has suffered from food shortage.
People are already eating once a day, which is not the culture here. So we are concerned about it, and we hope to try always possible to encourage the population to stay peaceful and be able to grow their own food during this next rainy season.
Rhoda Elisa Tata, deputy chair lady of the Women's Union in the former Western Equatorial State, agrees.
It is a shame for us in Western Equatoria to die from hunger, which have never happened before.
Tata says high food prices are also causing hunger. A bundle of vegetables used to cost 2 South Sudanese pounds. Now, if even available in the market, vegetables cost up to 15 South Sudanese pounds. Linda Andrew Mbugo, a mother of 4, says it's becoming increasingly difficult to feed her family in Yambio. Speaking in Arabic, Mbugo says, in order to feed herself and her children on the area's staple food, she must spend between 150 and 200 South Sudanese pounds per day. Mary Nginzo, a mother of 11, says she cannot afford the skyrocketing prices of commodities in the market. Nginzo says all she wants is peace.
Our cry as women in good state is we need peace soon, so that we would be able to go and cultivate, produce food for our children, for our nation, for the state particularly.
Evans Kenyi, a food security analyst at the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization in South Sudan, confirms that the current conflict in parts of former Western Equatorial State are causing widespread food shortages in the area.
The food security situation in Western Equatoria is impacted because of the conflict. At least a decline of about 20% has occurred this year because of a lower number of farming households and a lower planted area per household.
Kenyi is calling for immediate intervention from aid agencies.
There is need for those who are even displaced, that they should be assisted with the food items to allow them, to support them so that they're able to even cultivate.
Bishop Hiboro says the church is encouraging residents of urban areas including Yambio, Maridi and Mundri to grow a few crops around their compounds if they are unable to access their farms in rural areas. Aid agencies in South Sudan warned earlier this year that the country will face its worst levels of food insecurity since independence in 2011 due to continued fighting in parts of the country, high food prices, and the escalating economic crisis. Gift Friday for VOA News, Juba.
The governor of the new Wau state is calling on lawmakers to pass laws and policies that will allow the state government to provide food to residents. Governor Elias Wai Nyipoch described the challenges facing Wau state as worrying. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Wau.
My Almighty God, by Almighty Lord,
that I will bear,
that I will bear,
through faith.
36 lawmakers in the new Wau State Legislative Assembly were sworn in this morning. In its first session, members elected as Speaker Anyar Anyar from the Dinka Marial Bai community and Deputy Speaker Fiola Alexander Omeli from Wau community. A majority of the lawmakers appointed the new State Assembly are members of the former Western Baal Gazal State Assembly. Addressing the newly sworn-in lawmakers, Governor Elias Wanyipoch urged them to enact laws that promote food production to avert hunger.
We have to sit together and then we let us draft some strategies. There are immediate ones that we have to carry out very soon and very urgent, at least to preserve lives of people. We have to work tirelessly to sensitize our people.
Nyipoch says Wau State has secured 30 tractors to help produce food on a larger scale across the state. He says state executives must work closely with the legislature to effectively deliver basic services to the state's citizens.
After the completion of the three pillars of the government, the executive is there, the legislature, it is you, but then judiciary is there. The judiciary will be overseeing, will be seeing. It is between me, the executive, and you. So it is you that will direct the executive, and we are all under you. Whatever mistakes, if we are going astray in our policies, it is you to the cause of our movement.
Lawmaker Peter Andal called for unity in the state's leadership.
We have to respect the state constitution, and we have to respect each and every rule done by us as members. Now, what I'm expecting also, that the new appointed speaker and his deputy, they have to unite the assembly. We don't want to be in a conflict among ourselves, so as to deliver good services to our people and to oversee the executive and their work, because the executive cannot reach the ground unless we as a member of assembly, we have to raise a bill concerning the problem facing our people in the consequence as what is taking place now in Wau State. So many people have left their house, they are now scattered in the bush, and it is our role as a member of the assembly and the role of the executive to see what is going on in the state so that we bring the people back to their home.
Concerns were raised that the executive of the former Western Baal Gazal State government interfered with the works of the state assembly. Many lawmakers accused former state officials, including former Governor Hassan Rizik Zakaria, of violating the state constitution. The former assembly passed a vote of no confidence on the former state finance minister Lilian Valentino Rizik, a move the former executive downplayed. The lawmakers sworn in today say they do not want to repeat the mistakes of the past. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
War crimes, including killings, systematic rape, and forced disappearances, remain daily occurrences in South Sudan, as highlighted in reports this month from United Nations, Amnesty International, and Human Rights Watch. Some advocacy groups say sanctions and other targeted measures could make an impact where a peace deal has failed. Jill Craig reports from Nairobi.
The situation in South Sudan rapidly deteriorated after fighting broke out in December 2013, resulting in serious and systematic violence against civilians, according to the UN. Amnesty International found that government forces suffocated more than 60 men and boys to death in Unity State last October, and Human Rights Watch has found evidence of grave abuses in the Western Equatoria region. Ian Schwab is the director of advocacy and impact strategy at the Enough Project, a Washington-based Africa advocacy group.
What we see is a situation where there's gross violations of human rights, looting of state coffers and natural resources, and all the while, total lack of accountability for any of these horrific crimes that are being reported.
Signatories to an August 2015 peace deal have yet to form a transitional national unity government, originally planned for November. President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar continue to disagree over the demilitarization of Juba, among other issues. Violence has continued, and the country is in the grips of a full-fledged humanitarian crisis with more than 2 million people displaced and the UN warning of famine. The Enough Project is recommending targeted sanctions.
Well, we think the best places to start are to designate higher-level officials that are involved in these crimes and to make sure that those sanctions designations are enforced. We're not talking about, you know, any sort of comprehensive sanctions that would impact the country. We're looking at particular individuals that have been complicit and have directed these types of crimes and have been looting state resources.
Human Rights Watch senior Africa researcher Jahan Henry suggests the UN impose a comprehensive arms embargo on South Sudan.
We think that an arms embargo should have been implied a long time ago. The conflict started in December of 2013, and some of the worst episodes of fighting happened in the weeks and months that followed. We think an arms embargo was appropriate back then, at the beginning, when it became so clear that this was a war being waged not between soldiers, but against civilians.
South Sudan has been free to engage in state-to-state transfers in arms, without restrictions from sellers. Ukraine, for example, has sold the government light and heavy machine guns, as well as attack helicopters. Countries such as Britain and France support the idea of an embargo. The United States has argued that an arms embargo would give rebel forces an advantage, with Russia, China, and Angola also opposed. Human Rights Watch is also calling for the African Union to fast-track plans to set up a hybrid court for South Sudan.
Sends a message that people will be held responsible for allowing these abuses or for carrying them out.
The peace deal briefly raised hopes the fighting and rights violations would come to an end. But 7 months later, many observers are questioning the deal's value. They say the time has come for the international community to take new steps to end the misery in South Sudan. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, HIV-positive South Sudanese mothers are not getting treatment they need due to insecurity. That story after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today...
How much do you love your own country?
I love my country so much because Malawi has a good reputation wherever Malawi is mentioned. And so I love it so much and I want it to show a progress in everything that we are doing right now.
I can say there's no percentage, but I love my country. I'm patriotic and I just love it all, like wholeheartedly. There's no percentage I can rate it with. My country, South Sudan, of course, is blessed and I love it. Generally,
not 100%, but I love it a lot. In that, if there are some things concerning my country, which shows patriotism, like voting, like participating in other political stuff, I engage myself in such.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about HIV-positive women. Health officials in Wau County, the site of recent fighting between government forces and unknown gunmen, say hundreds of mothers and children living with the HIV are at risk of dying from the disease. They say the patients who were receiving medication from health centers in rural areas no longer have access to health facilities where they are living now due to insecurity. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Wau.
Here at Wau Teaching Hospital's Prevention of Malaria Child Transmission Center, a handful of women sought out for HIV treatment. Some of them are seeking advice on how to deliver their babies safely without exposing them to HIV infection. Others have brought their newborn for preventive treatment before final tests are conducted to confirm their baby's HIV status. Following recent violence in rural parts of Wau County, health facilities in outer-lying areas like Ingiza, Besilia, Namatina, and Bushere were closed due to insecurity. Health officials say the health of HIV-positive mothers and children displaced from villages are likely to deteriorate. Even villagers who now live in Wau town are not getting HIV treatment because they don't feel it is safe to walk around the town. Golda Peter, the guardian for a baby being treated for HIV at Wau Teaching Hospital, says she's been unable to find medication for several weeks. Speaking in Arabic, Peter says She lives in a distant village called Pan Amed, where health facilities have been shut down to the recent insecurity.
Peter
says a child she is caring for has gone more than a week without medication because no one could bring her to the facility because of insecurity along the way. She says she arrived here earlier today to meet the doctor. Hospital workers say they helped more than 60 babies from contracting the disease who were born to HIV-positive mothers last year. Natalina Waderith, the director of the Transmission Center at WOW Teaching Hospital, says for the last 2 months, the number of clients coming to a center has dropped, and she fears some patients could die if they fail to come for regular medication. Because of the ongoing insecurity in rural areas, she says HIV-positive pregnant mothers are being forced to deliver outside a health facility, putting their babies at risk of contracting the disease.
We are offering giving drugs to the oxypose infant, the children who are born from the mothers positive. But with this crisis, we lost a lot of them. Now they are not getting the drugs and we don't know where are they now.
Wadarif says political leaders must restore peace in the area so that HIV-positive mothers can once again come to the health facility and deliver healthy babies.
Now we have mothers are dying because of anemia, because they don't know the status of their hemoglobin. And the immunization the mother are not taking, and we are fearing the children they will born with some disease of immunization.
And Wadarif says some mothers will not know their HIV status and will risk giving birth to HIV-positive babies under the care of untrained nurses. That, she says, makes healthcare workers like herself very unhappy. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in WOW.
From WOW, we move to Darfur, where recent fighting in Jebel Mara has displaced tens of thousands of people, and the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says most of the people displaced are women and school children. Khalid Ahmed, an internally displaced person in Jebel Mara, says this is taking a psychological toll on children. Speaking in Arabic, Ahmed says there are thousands of children in central Darfur who are not in school because most of their teachers have fled to the caves for safety. Ahmed says students are not in schools due to insecurity in the area. He says children who are preparing for grade 8 exams are struggling. Deb Capella is UNICEF's chief education officer in Sudan. She says fighting has clearly disrupted school activities. He says at least 25% of school-aged children are out of school because of ongoing violence. This figure includes children from nomadic tribes of Darfur who no longer are able to roam the land in peace because of constant fear of aerial bombardment by the government warplanes.
So it is a massive children's crisis. So we had indeed a little bit over 6,400 children amongst the displaced who were about to sit grade 8 exams, but of course because of the displacement saw this huge opportunity being missed. So we as UNICEF, we did step in and did engage very firmly with the Ministry of Education at the federal level. We did engage in order to ensure that those 6,400 children would be able to sit their grade 8 exams. And I am very happy even to say that today almost every single of these children have been able to sit their exams.
Capella says there are reasons why at least 3 million Sudanese children are out of school across the country.
Why there are still an important number of children out of school in Sudan. And there are a number of reasons here. First is the issue of conflict. And the call is there again to all parties, stop the war, and it will be the guarantee for your boys and girls to go to school. Poverty is another important underlying cause.
Kapila says recent donation by the government of Japan to UNICEF will provide safe drinking water and adequate sanitation for many Sudanese people. He says the money will also go towards vaccinating 140,000 children and treating another 10,000 children identified as acutely malnourished. That report was prepared by VOA fellow Nadia Taha. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The foreign minister of South Sudan says his country is reducing the number of diplomats in the country's 32 embassies around the world. Barnaba Mariel Benjamin says the country has not been able to pay its diplomats since December of last year. He says the Ministry of Finance and the Bank of South Sudan are trying to come up with the money to send diplomats and other support staff their salaries soon. The bishop of the Tambora Yambio Catholic Archdiocese warns that residents of the former state of Western Equatoria will likely starve in the coming months if South Sudan's leaders do not move quickly to implement the peace deal. The UN says thousands of villagers fled their homes after recent fighting broke out between government forces and local vigilantes in the former state. Armed vigilantes control several rural areas, making it hard for villagers to return home and produce food. The bishop says although former Western Equatoria was often referred to as the breadbasket of South Sudan in the past, many residents can only afford one small meal per day today. And finally, the governor of the new state of Wau is calling on lawmakers to pass laws that will curb food insecurity and boost security. In its first session, members elected as Speaker Anyar Anyar from the Dinka Mariel Bai community and Deputy Speaker Viola Alexander Umile from Wau community. Addressing the newly sworn-in lawmakers, Governor Elias Waya Niapuch urged them to enact laws that promote food production to avert hunger. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Juba Alish by Ahmed Bremer.
We have been listening to Ahmed Bremer with the song Jubalish. I am John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us tuning in tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.